Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the All Day SJ Show. I'm your host, Steven Johnson, and as we know, the 2017 MLB season has come to a close. However, with the hot stove coming up and the winter meetings right around the corner, it's never too early to talk some baseball. Joining me right now is NBC Sports Chicago's web producer, writer, and Cubs reporter, Tony Andracki. Tone, what's going on, my brother?
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm real good, man. Just want to say thanks again for joining the show. I know my listeners are going to enjoy what you have to say. We got a lot to talk about as it pertains to the Cubs, so let's get right into it. Got to put you on the spot right away, Tone. We need you to recap the 2017 Cubs. How would you evaluate this season?
You know, it's really funny because you talk about a team that won, you know, 92 games and won a playoff series and made it to five games in the NLCS a couple years ago, or, you know, even really 2 or 3 years ago, any Cubs fan would take that and call that season an overwhelming success. But now, given that, you know, it's kind of been there, done that for Cubs fans, and the fact that they won the World Series last year, and that was the expectation this year, it's a failure in some sense, which is, you know, really funny to say that. It's funny to say that a team that made it to, you know, one of the final two teams left in the National League had a failure of a season, but that's really how it was, and that's the expectation now for Cubs fans and the Cubs themselves is they expect to be in the World Series and trying to win it every year, and they don't want to send their fans home with the disappointment of losing the final game of the year. Obviously, only one team this year, the Astros, can win the final game of the year, but they want to be that team every year, so I guess that's kind of the mixed bag that you have to evaluate this Cubs season with.
And that's a good point, Tone. And as you said, like the Astros, they obviously took the World Series title home. So me being a Cubs fan, I look at that as like, man, we didn't even lose to the champions. We lost to the Dodgers, but they couldn't even get it done. So I look at it as we're still the best team in the National League. We were the ones, the last team from the NL to win the World Series title. I know that's putting a lot of labels on it, but that's how I view it as a fan. And that loss to the Dodgers hurt. In my opinion, Tone, the Cubs, they just look like a tired team. Maybe it's because, like you said, they went to three straight NLCS. They were playing a lot of baseball. It's kind of like, I like to compare them to the recent Blackhawks dynasty, where you played a lot of hockey over a short period of time, and eventually it takes its toll on you. Do you think that that's a legitimate cause for the Cubs, how they didn't get the job done this season?
Yeah, I think that's a great call. I mean, look at all the Blackhawks Stanley Cups, and, you know, I think it's fair to say that the Blackhawks are a dynasty and have been since 2010, and they've never won back-to-back Cups. And, you know, look at the San Francisco Giants. It was the same thing. You know, each year, they won every other year. It was always that even year magic. They never were able to win back-to-back championships. I just think, you know, I mean, we haven't seen that in baseball since 2000.
Right.
It was 98 to 2000. The Yankees did it. I think the game has changed and how deep everybody's pitching into it and playing into it. I think pitching is a huge factor of that. But, you know, just the mental energy it takes to win a World Series and everything that comes after it, not to mention the fact that when, you know, you're the team that ends a 108-year championship drought,
right,
and become, you know, only defending, you know, like the only World Series winners in Chicago that are alive, like the last guys in 1908, none of them are around anymore, you know?
Right.
So I just think there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of mental energy spent on that. So you're right. I mean, even like the physical energy, of course, that was there. Chris Bryant even talked about being worn down, you know, at the end of the season and the way they had to win that NLDS. But the mental energy that they had to expend, I think, was even so much more than they ever realized, and honestly, than we ever realized, covering the team. But as fans, I mean, I had no idea what to expect, and this was way more than I thought it would be.
Great stuff, Tone. And obviously, when the Cubs lose like they did in NLCS, the Dodgers, let's be honest, they played better, they were better prepared in every facet of the game. There's going to be a trickle-down effect. And there was no bigger indication of that than in the changes with the Cubs coaching staff. Chili Davis is brought in. Chris Bosio is out. Dave Martinez is going to manage up in Washington. What do we make of these changes, and does that put an even bigger like view on Joe Maddon going forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the changes are they're a byproduct of the way the season ended, and you know John Mailey did obviously so many very good things. I mean, right. He helped you know nurture the Rookie of the Year and the MVP and Chris Bryant, and you know look at the numbers Rizzo has put up, and Addison Russell almost drove 100 runs last year as a 22-year-old. So like, I mean, John Mailey gets a ton of credit, but at the same time, I mean, the Cubs offense, they did it situationally. They were really vulnerable to high fastballs up in the zone, which is exactly how the Dodgers pitch, which is exactly what they had to do last year to beat the Dodgers in the NLCS. Ben Zobrist was even talking before the series about how he knew that it was going to be a terrible matchup because the Cubs are so susceptible to the high fastball in the zone or just out of the zone. I mean, you look at guys like Javi and Wilson Contreras, who often swing at that pitch. So, you know, unfortunately, I think it just was a byproduct of the Cubs needed another voice. And that was something that Maddon said. And, you know, it was a good point that they needed another voice. The message was, you know, probably fine in the most part. But for some reason, you know, they were tuning them out. And that just kind of happens sometimes. That has happened a little bit from Maddon. I mean, he's been a little overexposed from the guy who's done, you know, 500-plus media sessions in front of the camera each year for the last 3 years in Chicago. It's, right. You know, the same kind of thing is said for him, but obviously he's also still a World Series winning manager. And, but these other guys, like, that, you know, I can't take anything away from Chili Davis as the hitting coach for the Red Sox team that the last 3 years under his stead have been the best offense in baseball. They've scored the most runs. They have the highest OPS, the highest walk rate. They've seen the most pitches. You know, all these things. Yeah, they have good young players, but Chili Davis also deserves credit for that. And, you know, I think the Cubs really like the fact that he was available and can now help the Cubs young hitters do that. And then, you know, different guys. Brian Butterfield is widely considered one of the best, if not the best, third base coach in baseball. So, you know, the fact that they're available and then Chip Hickey, I mean, the Cubs' new pitching coach, he and Maddon go way back. You know, they worked together for like a decade, and they've been really close for that time. And so I think that's more of a matter of, you know, Maddon, especially knowing he was going to lose Dave Martinez, and there's a good chance that he was going to, wanting to get one of his own guys in. And Chip Hickey is also a very well-respected pitching coach who worked with guys like Chris Archer and Alex Cobb, who's a free agent right now, and so I think, you know, all these moves are, they say a lot about the coaches that are coming in without denigrating the coaches that leave, like the Chris Bosios or John Maley's. But, yeah, I mean, I think you're right, though. It does put a ton of pressure on Joe Maddon now because these are his guys that they brought in. He knew Chili Davis from the time when he was a coach in with the California Angels. And, Chili Davis was the designated hitter for that team. So, yeah, he knows these guys. And if they ultimately fail or struggle, he is going to take a huge brunt of the blame.
Awesome intel, Tone. And staying on the topic of changes, obviously we made changes to the coaching staff, but I wanted to get your opinion on the status of two critical pieces to the starter rotation the last 2 years, and that's Jake Arrieta and John Lackey. If you had to put a number on it, what would you say are the chances that Jake is brought back in addition to Lack? And two, to add to that, how would you fix the problem, which is the Cubs bullpen? I know it was kind of exposed in the postseason, this past postseason, outside of C.J. Edwards and Wade Davis. Maddon didn't really have a lot of options in the back end that he trusted. So what is your opinion on how they deal with those two impending free agents and how to strengthen the bullpen? And I don't think enough attention is being paid to this. Wade Davis is also a free agent. So what do you think the Cubs are going to do in that regard?
Well, to start off with the beginning part of the question about Jake and John Lackey, you know, really, I think Lackey, well, he is a free agent, but I think almost everybody is expecting him to ride off into the sunset and retire. Mm-hmm. John Lester, his closest personal friend and confidant on the Cubs, at least, has, you know, toasted to Lackey after his last regular season start and called it his last regular season start. So I think from that mindset. I imagine that Lackey will leave. I think there's still maybe a 1% chance that the Cubs might be able to talk him into coming back for one more year. They might want to talk him into coming back for one more year. But at the same time, I mean, the fact that the way the season ended, he had to go to the bullpen, which, you know, he telegraphed for 2 years here that he never wanted to go to the bullpen, and Joe Maddon said that would never happen. You know, he was so competitive that he only wanted to be a starter, and then, yeah, all of a sudden we saw him out of the bullpen in the last regular season game, and then in the playoffs, and that didn't ultimately end up well. So I really think we've seen the last of John Lackey in a Cubs uniform, and I think we've seen the last of Jake Arrieta in a Cubs uniform. I don't think that's a terrible thing for the Cubs, and it's just really a matter of Arrieta's going to go where the most money is, and that's not selfish. It's not, you know, it's not any knock on Jake. It's the only time in his whole career that he will get to make this much money to support his family for generations. And he's going to get that, you know. He's going to want $160 million or $180 million, or if somebody goes nuts, $200 million. And the Cubs aren't going to be able to do that. They can't do that for a guy who's going to be 32, who, yeah, he hasn't pitched a ton of innings, but he has shown regression over the last couple of years. He obviously won the Cy Young in 2015, and he was really awesome. But then, you know, saw a little regression in 2016, and then again in 2017. And so I think because of that, the Cubs can't devote that much money to him when they're already paying John Lester. They're paying Jason Hayward right now $20+ million a year to do what he's doing, which isn't a ton. And the fact that, you know, the Cubs need other pitchers, they're eventually going to have to pay the guys like Chris Bryant and Addison Russell and Javi Baez and Kyle Schwarber, all these guys that are cheap now, but quickly, soon, going to be very expensive. So, yeah, I don't think that Arrieta to hear coming back here really makes any sense. But again, I'd probably put like a 1% chance. I don't think that nobody shut the door. And the Cubs, obviously, they love Arrieta. He loves it here. But the fit is good in that sense. And, you know, Jake does have a sense of pride and a sense of, you know, commitment to the fact that he really started this career based off of what the Cubs did for him and what the city did. So he, regardless of where he goes, he's never going to forget that. And he's never going to forget what it was like to pitch here. And to be honest, we might be a Dexter Fowler situation where even if he does go somewhere else, it might ultimately be, you know, not be anywhere near as happy as, like, he might still be tired, you know, thinking that the Cubs career is the happiest time of his career. So, but yeah, I think, you know, a fit like the Dodgers or maybe even the Angels, if they have money, they need starting pitching. I think that would be great for Arrieta, who, you know, has interest in restaurants and improv and doing different things. I think he'd be perfect fit in L.A. somewhere for one of those two teams. But then, yeah, moving to the bullpen, really, you know, yeah, it didn't work out for the Cubs, but look around to the entire landscape of baseball. Bullpen was good this year. The Dodgers was really good against the Cubs in the DS and then against the Cubs in the CS. But in the World Series, both bullpens were awful.
Right.
They were just horrendous. I mean, the Dodgers from overuse, but Kenley Jansen's final postseason numbers looked pretty good. But also keep in mind that he worked almost every game, and he was just totally worn out by the time the World Series came.
Right.
And he, you know, he just looked totally human in the World Series. The Astros got to him multiple different times. So, and then guys like Brandon Morrow, who, he's a free agent as well, so he's a possible Cubs target, but he worked in every single game of the World Series. He was totally worn out by the end, too. So, you know, the bullpen itself this postseason was far from what we saw in 2016, where guys like Andrew Miller were breakout stars. So I think just baseball changed a little bit, and this year especially with whatever happened with the balls, I'm not sure, you know, how juiced they were, if at all. But, you know, if that's the case, the main thing that they were talking about that they were slicker is sliders. It affected sliders and cutters. Well, most pitchers out of the bullpen have a wicked slider or cutter. You look at guys like Hector Rondon in the Cubs, or, you know, Wade Davis as well, but Kenley Jansen has a cutter, Brandon Morrow has a slider. These guys, if that pitch was affected as much as they say they were, and the proof is there, it really affected relievers as much as anybody else. So, you know, with how much the Astros and the Dodgers both use starting pitchers, out of the bullpen as the World Series came on, I think it was a problem that wasn't just on the Cubs and Joe Maddon with the bullpen. But that being said, I mean, apart from Wade Davis, there were zero guys that Maddon could trust on there. So Cubs definitely have a ton of work to do. And one of those things, the items on their offseason checklist, might be trying to figure out how to bring Wade Davis back without breaking the bank.
NBC Sports Chicago's web producer, writer, and Cubs reporter Tony Andracki joining me on the All Day SJ show. And Tony, you hit it right on the head. The Cubs got a lot of work to do. And I need to get your honest opinion on this because everyone's looking into the status of multiple young players the Cubs have that they could probably offer in a deal to swing another elite starter or another elite young player this way. So do you expect anyone or could anyone be traded, such as a Kyle Schwarber or an Addison Russell? And for whom do you think those two can be offered for in a deal?
Yeah, I do expect one to be traded this winter. Actually, Theo Epstein in his postseason press conference said that. He said that they probably will have to trade one of their young position players for pitching. They just have too many right now. You know, there's not enough time or not enough room for everybody to play. And right now, Jason Hayward, his contract, yeah, maybe they would try to trade him, but he's over $150 million almost. I think it's $146 exactly. That's really tough to trade for a guy who his postseason line the last 2 years going up against elite pitching. Jason Hayward has hit worse than Cubs pitchers have hit in October. So it's really tough with you know, yeah, the guy's amazing in the clubhouse and his teammates love him and he's a fantastic defender. You know, easily the best outfield defender in baseball right now. But for a guy who struggled to hit for two straight years now, it's difficult to play a guy that much. So if they can't move him, then you got him locked into playing all the time. You have Ben Zobrist, who, even if he turns into a part-time player, he's still going to be around making $12 million for the next 2 years. Then obviously you've got Rizzo and Bryant and Wilson Contreras who are not moving. Well, all of a sudden, that takes up five of your eight spots. So then you've got Javi Baez, Addison Russell, Albert Almora, Ian Happ, and Kyle Schwarber. Not to say anything else about guys like Tommy La Stella or any other bench guy, maybe, you know, John Jay comes back or a similar type of guy.
Right.
There's, like, no playing time for these guys. And it was amazing that Joe Maddon was able to even do what he was able to do this year and get all those guys out, and injuries contributed to that. But, yeah, the Cubs need starting pitching, and they should trade one of these guys. And I think Ian Happ makes the most sense in who ends up leaving, I think, because he doesn't have a position, and they can sell high on a guy who probably would have been the rookie of the year after Cody Bellinger,
right.
Or at least close to him. He had a fantastic rookie season. And, you know, I think with his power, everybody looks at him right now with a full season and more advancement, he could easily be 30 to 40 home run guy here while playing multiple different positions, showing off speed, drawing walks. So they could get a decent amount for him. And then, yeah, there's always the talk of Schwarber going to the American League or guys like Javi, you know, selling high on Javi. I don't think Russell or Schwarber are the guys that will be traded because the Cubs would be selling low on both of them. You know, Schwarber, yeah, he had 30 homers, but he still spent the year at the minors. He barely hit .210 there. I think he finished with like .212 batting average.
Right.
So people will look at that, and I mean, the Cubs expect more out of Schwarber, and I think they would get more out of him. They would have definitely got more this time last year from a guy who just came back in the World Series the way he did. So I don't think that because of that they'll sell high on him. And we know Addison Russell's off the field issues plus his health issues this year. So it doesn't make sense because when he gets as much value out of selling those two guys, whereas selling high on Javi and selling high on Ian Happ, they get as much as they possibly could for those guys, at least as of right now. But yeah, I think one of these guys will get traded simply because the Cubs have to. They need a starting pitcher. Guys like Chris Archer are available out there. He looks like the best option. He'd be the ideal option for the Cubs. He has several more years of control, and he knows what it's like to pitch for Maddon and now some Hickey too. And he's an elite guy who, moving from the American League to the National League, could possibly be, you know, a one or two I mean, imagine, you know, him, Quintana, Kyle Hendricks, and Don Lester in a rotation is, it comes to salivate. But I think he'd be the ideal candidate. Beyond that, I mean, who knows? It just depends on who's available and who's not. And right now, I'm not 100% sure who will be available from other teams. And, you know, that the key is how much will the Cubs have to deal with two position players. And they don't really have any prospects to deal with. So if the Cubs, you know, have to give up an Ian Happ, will they be able to, like, would they be able to get Chris Archer just for Ian Happ? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know how the Rays do everything. If I'm the Rays, I would probably do that, to be honest. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know what their thinking is, their line of thinking. So it is difficult, but yeah, I definitely expect the Cubs to acquire a starting pitcher via a trade and get rid of one of the guys that fans have grown to love here over the last year or so.
Awesome stuff, Tone. And like you just touched on it, and we'll wrap it up soon because I know your time is limited, but you talked briefly about how you expect there to be changes and how there might not be enough playing time to go around for a lot of these guys. That makes me want to ask you the question about a very, very big potential Cub in the year 2019. Now, recently, this guy was spotted wearing a Chicago Bulls hat. He was at a Blackhawks game in Las Vegas. And, you know, it's Halloween season. He just recently had a pumpkin carved with the Cubs C in it. I got to put you on the spot again, man. Bryce Harper to the Cubs in 2019. Like, is this going to happen? Are Cubs fans excited?
Well, actually, the C in the pumpkin was a Photoshopped photo. so it was, it got quite a few people. But, you're right. He's worn, you know, he's had a bunch of Blackhawks and Bulls hats and shirts. And, you know, he was just at the Blackhawks game last week. And his dog is named Wrigley. And he talked openly about wanting to play with Chris Bryant and playing at Wrigley Field, how much he loves it. But he also has admitted that he trolls the media because he knows that we and media and fans make a much bigger deal out of it than it is. So it's funny, and I like that he's actually admitted to that. So I think that's a huge part of what it is. The chances of Bryce Harper coming here, realistically, are very, very slim.
Ooh.
There just isn't enough money to go around. There's not, especially while Jason Hayward's on the books. And if they trade Hayward, the only way they're going to be able to do that is if they get a ton of money back in return.
Right.
So, I mean, something that David Kaplan threw out on our NBC Sports Chicago podcast yesterday, actually, on Thursday this week, was Jason Hayward to the Giants for Jeff Samardzija and Mark Melancon. Both of those guys, Melancon, I think, has 3 years left. Samardzija has 4 years left in his deal. So, okay, so you take 2018 out of it. Well, Samardzija's money is still on the books for 3 years,
right,
and Melancon for 2 years, that Bryce Harper would be there. That's a lot of money. Then you're talking about, you know, Ben Zobrist is still in the books, John, for 1 year in 2019, John Lester for 2019 and 2020. So even though, like, Jose Quintana is a great value, Anthony Rizzo is a great value, then you're talking about Chris Bryant getting arbitration, Addison Russell, Kyle Schwarber, Javi Baez, El Mora, Contreras, all these guys starting to get a lot more expensive. The Cubs have basically have no room at all to pay any pitchers.
Right.
So it'd be really difficult. They would have to sell the farm. And if they're able to do that, even if they do pay for Bryce Harper, they're basically going to be over the luxury tax every year. And by doing so, that's eventually going to hurt their prospect pool. It's going to hurt their farm system because they're not going to have money to devote to the draft, to the international signing. And that's just based off MLB sanctions. It's not that the Cubs aren't going to make enough money. I mean, we all know the Cubs is a huge brand. They make a ton of money.
Right.
But, yeah, there's going to be the rules in place and stuff from MLB that they cannot afford Bryce Harper for $40 million a year. Whereas a team like the Yankees is going to be able to do that because they have so many cheap options and guys coming off the books that, you know, the Yankees could do it. The Astros at that point could probably do it as well because of so many cheap players. So there are going to be all these teams out there that are going to have a much better opportunity to give Bryce Harper the money that he deserves as a 26-year-old that the Cubs are not going to have. And you know what? There's no way he's taking a freaking discount to come to Chicago. As much as he names his dog whatever, or wears whatever, yeah, or wants to hang out with Chris Bryant, there's no way he takes a discount to come here. And the whole thing about him and Chris Bryant, well, Bryant's going to be a free agent a year or two after he would get here, after Harper would get here. Do you think there's really a possibility of Harper and Chris Bryant both playing on mega deals here? There's no way the Cubs could afford that. So the whole dream of Bryant and Harper playing together would only be for 2 years max, and then one of them would have to go, and I would imagine it'd be Chris Bryant in that case anyway. So, I mean, as much as that'd be fun for Cubs fans to dream, I think it's really difficult to ever picture him here. And if he does come here, that greatly reduces the chances that Chris Bryant would re-sign. So then I think if he comes back, we'd have to eventually choose Chris Bryant or Bryce Harper. And that'd be a difficult choice to choose against the guy who's won Rookie of the Year, MVP, and World Series in just his first 3 years here.
Tone, that is awesome intel and great stuff. I'm sure you're going to enlighten a lot of my listeners with that information. Let me again thank you for taking the time to come on my show. You're a very hardworking, talented individual. I just wanted to take this time off to say congratulations on the Emmy you just received for your awesome work. And also wanted to wrap it up by asking you what other projects you have going on at NBC Sports Chicago that you want to update us on.
Really, I actually got a lot of time off coming up, which is really nice. Worked a lot during the Cubs playoffs, so I get quite a bit of time off for the holidays, but I will be doing the Club Talk podcast every week. You can find that on anywhere from Audio Boom or Art19 and NBCSportsChicago.com/podcast. We'll work with David Kaplan, Patrick Mooney, Kelly Kroll, and other producers on that. So I'll be doing that every week throughout the offseason, talking different moves, talking, you know, the Cubs coaching staff. It's been a big topic. So that'll be the main focus for me for the winter here until we get to spring training.
That's awesome stuff, man. And I know I'll update people on this. You're a contributor to the Fantasy Fix show with Slavko and Scott. Maybe one of these days before the playoffs start, I'll get all you guys on here. Give me your picks for the postseason. So, Tone, I really appreciate you joining the show, man. This was awesome stuff. A lot of good information in there. Keep up the good work, and I would love to have you on again in the future.
Sounds good. Thanks, man. Really appreciate the time, too.
Thank you, Tone. I appreciate it, my brother.